The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today is Jason Kimry. He's the Area Director, U.S. Federal for Intel Corporation. Good afternoon, Jason. How are you?
Good afternoon. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
And a lot of companies got to explain. I got to spell the name. I got to tell what, well, I-N-T-E-L is not much spelling there, but I think everyone listening knows what Intel's all about. So I think now we're going to talk about what the company does and the origins of the company. Been around since forever. We don't know that. Since like the mid-60s or something, late 60s. So that's right. Just it's incredible longevity. What I want to talk about today is what Intel means to my listeners. Okay, well, Intel's a big company, got a lot of products, involved in many different areas. So what? What does it mean for a typical listener of Federal Tech Talk? Can Intel help my listeners achieve their goals, maybe reach some of the agency goals here in the next couple of years? Or what kind of innovations does Intel have that, you know, can help me? Now, Intel's been through all kinds of innovations, and here and there, I remember back with Pentium processors and moved to solid state and in and out of the cloud. And it seems to be morphing and changing with the times. And I wanted to bring Intel in and talk about why they can still be valuable to my listeners. Before we begin, tell us about your background, how you wound up working with this huge company.
Sure. Yeah. So thanks again. Thanks for having me. I've been at Intel for about 15 years, and about the last eight of those has been managing our federal team. And prior to that, career at EDS, a few other tech startups, and I actually grew up in Charlottesville, went to James Madison University. So a long history here in the area, and Intel's just been it's been a really exciting place to work. And I think, for a long time, we've been at the center of the computing ecosystem. But I think what's been interesting over the last decade or so is watching how fundamental technology has become to everyone's business, whether it's your personal business or your professional business. You know, technology is really changing everything. And at Intel, we like to believe that we play a key role in that, and we want to continue to. And I think from a federal agency standpoint, it's been really interesting to watch how the missions of the various agencies are being transformed by technology, some good, some bad. But I think overall, there's no question on the importance of it moving forward.
Let's not forget your MBA from the University of Georgia. And back when you were doing your MBA, I suspect you had a desktop computer, if we even know what those are anymore, and you were real excited about the next chip to come out from Intel, and that was a big deal. I mean, I can remember front page news in the Washington Post. Hey, we got a 386 coming out. Whoa, 36DX. Whoa, and a 36SX. And this is really exciting news. And increasingly, we see less and less of that, but we see all kinds of Internet of Things. We see devices. We see routers. We see all kinds of different things with Intel chips in them. And so that's I think it's the way it's changed. And I think the last time we were in the studio, we talked about the cloud and virtualization and data centers. I think those are all important. But I see this shift now from, we almost assume Intel's going to be there and provide the power and efficiently and cooling. But what about the other end of the argument, the edge? I think that's where you're looking at now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, for years, it was all about, how many gigahertz is my processor going to be, or is my desktop going to be? And we actually still see, occasionally specifications come out from government agencies and others that they want a certain gigahertz machine. And the reality is that is important, but we stopped kind of this push towards the chase for gigahertz, years ago, really because, as you move towards that, that strategy, there is an impact from a heat and power and stuff like that. So what we really focused on, and really for a long time now, has been around user requirements. What is it that people want out of their technology? And, what we've seen, it's continued to have, better form factors, lower power, longer battery life, still want performance capabilities, but they want performance in the areas that they matter, video processing, faster access to memory, things like that. So I think, and that's why you've seen such a proliferation of new form factors and devices from a range of manufacturers, because Intel really has focused on improving those capabilities in hardware that really create, you know, some really exciting form factors, whether that's a laptop or a desktop, an all-in-one, or more and more frequently, really these new devices at the edge. And it's the technology that you're seeing in everything from drones to washing machines to cars. A lot of those innovations are made possible by Intel. You know, the one thing I would say, people take a lot of these performance benefits and advantages for granted, but you know, just we do continue to focus in that area. You know, just for example, performance today on a laptop is actually 180% greater than even those same machines 5 years ago, 60% less power, tons of hardware security features, including enhanced malware, BIOS protection, identity protection functionality, all these things that through the power of Moore's Law are enable us to provide capabilities, not just around power and performance, but new management and security features.
And that's it. You know, back when I got my first car, I paid $300 for it, and it sure didn't have air conditioning. Now, I mean, we assume air conditioning and Bluetooth. We just assume so many things. The real issue is now is mileage, I guess, and ability to maybe operate it by its own. So the game has changed so drastically with the transition from a focus on the PC and the CPU itself and to the cloud. Tell me about the Edge and some of the Edge products that you're working with at Intel.
Yeah, so I think you know, Intel, you know, for a long time has been known for a few core products. Core, the core processor, the Xeon processor, Pentium. Now we see kind of smaller and smaller processors that are meant to be put in things at the edge. The Quark processor, even Curie processor. These are technologies that are meant to, you know, for example, at CES this year, we announced a partnership with ESPN. What we're doing is we're putting Curie modules, which is, again, it's a very tiny processor, on all of the snowboards that the competitors were using. And through those, you know, having real, you know, advanced processing sitting on the snowboard with the ability to do analytics, we're able to provide users with visibility to everything from G-forces to height to rotations, all kinds of information that was never available, but it's now available because of us, our ability to put processing at the edge in very small form factors in devices that historically never even thought about having compute capability on them.
And if you want to pursue this further, you can go to Google and type in harnessing the power of IoT. And there's a white paper written by Tiffany Sargent from Intel. And that's what she talks about. She talks about, you know, okay, we have small devices out there. What does this all mean? She talks about reduced time to information, reduced cost of storage. I mean, edge devices are kind of fun to talk about in the sporting world, but what about a military application, or what about, you know, a weather application? So many agencies have different applications where they can benefit from some of these breakthroughs.
Yeah, it's IoT is such an interesting space because when you talk about it and you read about it, there isn't a problem in the world that couldn't be solved by Internet of Things and putting smart computing at the edge. I think the challenge is really, how do you approach it? How do you implement it? How do you architect those solutions? And I think that's one of the big things that Tiffany from my team has been working on, is really this IoT architecture, really approaching the problem with a platform strategy. How do you take sensors that are in the field today, brownfield sensors, you know, dumb sensors, and then add intelligence? You know, you really need an architectural strategy on how you're going to do that. And then even more importantly, how are you going to secure the data? Because the more data you capture and the more you analyze it, the more important it is that you secure it. So, you know, that is, it's a big focus for us. We like to believe that the problems that we're solving, you know, even the snowboard example, maybe that doesn't necessarily have applicability to military, but what does have applicability to military is the concept of doing analytics at the edge. And that's exactly what we're doing there. It's exactly what our government agencies want to do. It's certainly what DOD wants to do, is how do you process information as close to the point of data capture as possible, make decisions, and then discard the data that you don't need. Those are the problems that we're trying to solve on a daily basis for transportation, automotive, sports, and military, aerospace, and government. So it's a really exciting time for the industry and certainly Intel.
you know, I think the snowboard is a good topic because that is the bleeding edge, and the lessons learned there with durability and with gathering data can be applied directly to many of my listeners. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break, come back. I think we'll talk more about maybe Obama's $19 billion cybersecurity plan and where does Intel fit in, and talk more about the edge and maybe the IoT Center for Excellence as well. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this afternoon, we have Jason Kimry, Area Director, U.S. Federal Intel Corporation. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this afternoon, Jason Kimry, Area Director, U.S. Federal Intel Corporation. I'm going to toss out a fun fact, and you bounce it back to me here, Jason. A Cisco has recently reported that if they look at internet traffic, and they have routers and stuff, they look at internet traffic all the time, and they say by the year 2017, 70% of internet traffic is going to be videos. That's not everyone watching Netflix. It's going to be short video tutorials, maybe online classes. How's that going to impact a company like yours? Incredible video going over the internet and clouds.
We love it. I mean, we have, you know, we have this saying, you know, when data moves, Intel wins. And you know, so I think that's a you know, whether that statistic is true, I certainly believe it. I think video is obviously it's a huge data creator. I think the other big, you know, we were talking about IoT. I mean, it's when you start talking about the increase in smart sensors and smart processors at the edge, every one of those is going to be capturing data. Every one of those is going to be communicating to a network. Just a huge increase in data traffic through a variety of sources, and we're excited about it. It's that type of growth that's fueling a lot of the growth projections we have in all aspects of our business, everything from IoT to the data center, because it truly is a virtuous cycle. The more compute that you have at the edge, the more processing and the more data center requirements you have on the back end.
One subject in the newspapers here is cryptography. And when you think about cryptography, we can go down, oh, there's a jillion areas, all kinds of consumer stuff and even front page news stuff. But more and more people are thinking about cryptography for using the cloud. Have you designed aspects of your chip to incorporate that or to work with that? Or that's just another burden on a chip, I would think.
Security in general is paramount to Intel, and it's again, because of the role that we play in the computing ecosystem that, you know, our processors sit in many of the devices that are deployed today. We truly believe that it's our fundamental responsibility to add more security capabilities inside the silicon, bring those capabilities as close to the CPU as possible, and by doing so, reducing the threat attack surface that our enemies can exploit. So there's a whole bunch of things that we're doing in this area, everything from adding random number generator to stronger authentication capabilities to accelerated encryption algorithms, just lots and lots of different features, some that we embed in the silicon that work straight out of the box, some that we provide open APIs for partners like Microsoft and others to take advantage of, and that's what you see in things like Windows 10 and others are, you know, really better utilization of the hardware features by the software companies that our federal agencies use every day.
Well, you just hit a kind of a raw nerve there with Windows 10, and we've all seen the reports. DoD is making a big move to Windows 10, aren't they? I guess that's right in your backyard.
You know, it's great to see DoD taking that leadership position. Moving to a modern OS environment like Windows 10 is fundamentally the right thing to do if we want to provide a more secure landscape for our federal employees and constituents. You know, we all know about the different breaches that have happened, OPM obviously being the most notable and one of the big, there've been a lot of, finger pointing on that one, but one of the key things that was highlighted was the lack of a strong authentication strategy for within their environment, and things like Windows 10 combined with the latest sixth generation core processors that are available today from all the OEMs provide, you know, significant improvements in everything from authentication to manageability to really just raising the overall security profile. So I applaud DoD in really taking a stand. And I think what's going to be interesting is we're going to be watching not only the other federal civilian agency, this federal civilian agencies, you know, potentially follow suit, but really I think the broad commercial market. So we're excited about it, and we think it's absolutely the right thing to be doing.
I'm kind of fascinated by Windows 10. I've been using Windows 10 for, I don't know, since it came out, and I have no problems with it. Yet my 27-year-old daughter, who is a civil engineer, she switched to Windows 10, and she's, well, moaning and groaning and complaining. I'm saying to myself, well, who's the flexible one here, Lauren? Yeah. You're moaning about Windows 10. I've used it for the last year and a half. I just kind of switched out. And there's my old guy's story saying, hey, who's the flexible one here?
Yeah.
But I think there's, even at a young age, you can get emotional attachment to certain ways of doing things. And even if it's an improvement, I just think there's a human factor here. It's like, look, we can have Jason come in and you can drive down to Charlottesville and you can lecture her for 3 hours about Intel and Windows 10 and security and pounding the table and blah, blah. There's still an emotional component and people resist that change.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, we saw it a lot of that resistance with Windows 8. And, you know, there were some challenges with Windows 8, but a lot of it, I think, was just there was such a familiarity with Windows 7 and the prior generations that it was such a big leap. That, you know, there were some challenges. Windows 10, I actually believe is really provides the best of both worlds. It provides a great touch experience if that's what you want, but it also provides a much improved you know, standard desktop experience for people that liked Windows 7. So I really I think it's a great platform, and it, you know, I think people, the more they use it, the more they'll come to value it.
My kids are all grown, but I think I had a guest in here a few weeks back, and he talked about his 3-year-old daughter who walked up the television and tried to hand swipe the television to move the screen.
Yeah.
So I'm saying to myself, well, you know, it's not just desktop computers anymore with a keyboard and a mouse interface. Now, I can remember resistance to the first Windows.
Yeah,
and I remember the next Windows resistance. I mean, you can just name a Windows, there's going to be resistance to it, you know?
It's funny. Speaking of, I've got two young kids, a 6 and an 8-year-old, and I've got this video. It's actually on YouTube, of my daughters. We were at my grandfather's house. He's turns 94 this month, and went back into his bedroom where he had a old rotary phone.
Oh, well, yeah, I can imagine this one.
And my girls had never seen it, so we walked back there, and I had the video running, and I said, "Girls, here's my cell phone number. Why don't you call it?"
Yeah,
and they sat there for 5 minutes, you know, pushing the rotary
right
dial,
as the first push the dial.
Yeah, you know, holding the phone upside down. I mean, literally could not figure out how to make a call for the life of them, and it was just, you know, trying to touch the dial pad, just doing everything that you would imagine. Yeah. Because, you know, technology of the old days, it's just, you just forget how quickly it's changing and how the expectations, certainly in the new generation, has just completely changed, and it's up to us to make sure that we're staying ahead of that and create technology that meets their requirements.
I have a Surface Pro. I'm sitting on my kitchen table typing away. I split off the keyboard. I walk into the living room, and I can watch television and see sports statistics. Then after the game's over, I go back to the kitchen, pop in the keyboard, and I'm writing. I mean, yeah. This is, I mean, you know, people expect this these days, but you go back even 10 years, and you would have said, John, you're on some kind of drugs. I mean, This is, you're not going to just literally pull off the keyboard and walk around with a tablet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to happen. But, you know, it's just, I think this is a modality. I think whether you like Windows 10 or don't like Windows 10, you know, you're going to have to adapt and change. If it's more secure, then you don't have a choice, I don't think.
Yeah. No, I think, if somebody had told you, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago that everyone would be walking around with something in their hand that could give you the answer to any question at any time, at any point you want it, you know, you'd think they were crazy, but now
you mean a beeper? No, I don't mean a beeper.
You know, we're walking around. Everyone's walking around with the equivalent of a supercomputer in their hands. You know, the supercomputers of, you know, from the late 90s, literally, you know, have the same power as, you know, and processing capability as, you know, a small form factor laptop that we're shipping today. So you just imagine, you know, as we continue to accelerate and advance our technology, what's going to be possible 10, 15 years from now.
There is a fellow down the road by the name of President Obama, and he just talked about $19 billion with a B dollar cybersecurity plan. Let's take a little break and come back and talk about cybersecurity and maybe the folks up at NIST. And what's the Intel Corporation got to do with it? Where do they fit in? I mean, they're an essential player. Do they have some innovation that can help this whole cybersecurity plan? And what are the components of it? What does it mean mostly to my listeners? You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM in the studio. Jason Kimry, Area Director, U.S. Federal, Intel Corporation. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM in the studio. Jason Kimry, Area Director, U.S. Federal, Intel Corporation. 10 years ago, we've been talking about new motherboards and CPUs and speeds and heat sinks, but now we're talking about everything. We're talking about consumer watches, drones, bicycles, edge devices, analytics, all kinds of different things. And before the break, we talked about Obama's $19 billion cybersecurity plan. So I'll just toss it right at you, Jason. So where does Intel fit in with this cybersecurity plan?
So we're right in the middle of the computing ecosystem, and through that, we're right at the heart of cybersecurity, and we're very active with government policy. We're very active with NIST and the National Cyber Center of Excellence that relaunched and was expanded last week. We've been designing hardware-assisted security technologies into our platforms for years, and even what 5 years ago acquired McAfee, now known as Intel Security. We're invested in all aspects of security. And I think the key for us is, we're going to do what we can as a company to ensure that our platforms and our technologies are the most secure that they can be. But as we've seen, cybersecurity is not a single company's problem. It's not a single agency's problem. It is an industry problem. And it's something that we must collectively come together to address to improve the overall risk posture of this nation. So I'd say that's we're really trying to address it from a couple of different areas. From Intel standpoint, it's all about secure data protection. It's about improving malware protection, enhanced security capability. But again, I think where we really have to get to is really looking at the cyber challenge much more holistically, the hardware, the network, the software, as an integrated platform, but then also playing a key role in the cyber policies, and then last but certainly not least, and probably most importantly, are the people. We do not have enough cyber professionals in government today. We have to do more to train up our cyber professionals, and we also just need to raise the overall awareness of people of what does it mean to maintain a secure computing environment, because you may have the most secure platforms on the planet, but people are still the weakest link in the cyber challenge, and it's incumbent upon all of us to improve that.
I'll be in the classroom tonight, and my students are all about social media and LinkedIn and Twitter, and you folks have a hashtag. I think it's hashtag Intel Federal, which is kind of interesting to find out what's going on. That's great to know. You may want to know that this is also a podcast. So you can go to the Apple Store and type in Federal News Radio. You can download this as a podcast. You can listen to this live. You can listen to this online. All kinds of ways to get information. Many of my students get information from blogs. In fact, I forced them to write a blog. Is there any blogs that you read, or how do you keep up with all this technology? I mean, there's so much stuff going on. What do you read? How do you keep up?
Yeah, it's hard. And I'd say, I certainly use Twitter and quite a bit, and follow a number of different people as well as organizations to get quick access to news. I used an app called Skimmin, which is a kind of provides real quick access to news articles, very short blurbs about what's going on in a variety of different areas. I used Pulse, which was acquired by LinkedIn, quite a bit, which is a great news aggregation. They've changed their strategy a little bit, but I still use that to provide a lot of access to business content. You're able to really select a lot of different thought leaders, as well as companies, as well as different magazines that your publications that you're interested in, and through some intelligence and other algorithms that they run on their side, really produce a range of different technology and business articles that I find particularly helpful. So I'd say, you know, so between Twitter, the LinkedIn Pulse app, and the Skim app that I use, that's I find to be a pretty good source of content. And of course, at Intel Federal, our Twitter handle is a great source of information
to follow
as well.
On. Yeah, that's good. When I search hashtag Intel, boy, I just tons and tons of stuff. I mean, just I just spend the next 8 hours hashtag Intel, all kinds of new things. When I think about it, though, I think about supercomputing because that's a big position you're at. I mean, and that's part and parcel of the cybersecurity plan, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, say it's high performance computing is so interesting because for years it was something that the DOE did, or it's something that the intelligence community did,
or and NASA. That's what you NASA. Think DOE or NASA. That's
yeah,
what I think.
Science based, and it's still the things that it's enabling from a science standpoint continue to blow me away. I mean the improvement in weather forecasting, the mission to Mars, the intelligence capabilities that we're enabling are really stunning, and we're going to continue to support that type of capability. I think what's really exciting, and this is why President Obama signed the executive order for the National Supercomputing Initiative back over the summer, is really around the concept of the democratization of HPC. How do we move high-performance computing out of the being viewed as a purely science and research-based initiative into the mainstream, solving problems as it relates to cancer research, genomics, improve weather forecasting, things that will improve our overall economic competitiveness. Everything that we've done for years in high-performance computing in those traditional agencies has direct benefit and impact for every federal agency, for every major corporation. And with our role, we power 85% of the top 500 supercomputers on the planet today. We're going to continue to invest in this area and really help drive this, what we call democratization of HPC, in a much bigger way, and really help agencies and companies at large harness the power of high-performance computing to make their business or their mission more effective.
Remember that old ad for BASF? They said, we're not recording, we make recording better, or something like that, you know? I think you can say is, hey, we're not high-performance computing, we make high-performance computing better. I mean, you're the engine behind it, and so no matter what people, as far as in-out goes and logic behind it, I mean, you can provide the motor that can make that better. So the BASF years ago.
And, I think whether it's high-performance computing, whether it's cloud, whether it's big data, whether it's analytic, or whether it's IoT or even mobile computing, we like to believe that we are playing a role in advancing the overall capabilities that each one of those areas has through our role in not only making our products better, but raising the overall ecosystem up to provide better, faster, more valuable technology to the broad market.
Well, so far we talked about IoT, we talked about a little touch on client computing, but really the big dog in the room that we're going to maybe focus on now is the data center group and DCG, and talk about data centers. And this is really where you've had a lot of success with, well, you know, every time you you fire up your old Netflix and you sit down with an iced tea and watch a movie, that's going to a server somewhere that's probably going to have an Intel chip in it somewhere. And so this is really where the big mark has been made with Intel and the data centers, isn't it?
It certainly has been a big growth engine for our company, and we continue to see that that moving forward. Because again, it's the amount of data that's being created is not going down anytime soon. And the more data that you have, the more compute requirements you have on the back end. Where that compute happens, whether it's an on-prem or an off-prem data center, whether it's in a public cloud from AWS or Azure, or it's a hosted facility, or it's in a traditional data center, those compute requirements are going to go up, and we are going to continue to focus on providing capabilities to ensure that we provide the best experience and the best processing for those data centers, but also continue to understand the workloads that are being run in those environments and optimize and tune those best for our cloud service providers, for our agencies, for anyone that's looking to process data. In fact, we even acquired, and I think people are just starting to kind of get their head around what this means, we acquired Altera, which is the leading producer of field programmable arrays. And what we see is the power of combining that with a traditional Intel Xeon data center processor.
One is three. That's what you got there.
Yeah. So I just think it's really provides a ton of possibilities, and we're excited about that.
If you type in Motley Fool and Intel, you'll find an article recently written by a fellow by the name of Ashraf Issa, and he says that Intel is a very well-run business, which is a pretty good compliment, I think. It's not me. It's not you. And it's an independent financial company going, well, geez, you know, this is it's spreading its bed. It's getting into many different areas, and it's providing value to commercial organizations and the federal government as well. Let's take a little break, come back. We'll talk more about maybe open source and where Intel fits in, and then give you the nerd test and find out if you, in fact, are a card-carrying nerd. This is Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this afternoon, Jason Kimmery, Area Director, U.S. Federal Intel Corporation. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Jason Kimmery, Area Director, U.S. Federal for Intel Corporation. And no, we're not talking about motherboards. No, we're not talking about CPUs and speeds and all that stuff. We're talking about Intel and many different aspects of the life of a federal IT professional. And if you'd like to learn more just about one little aspect, just about IoT, there's a white paper out there, and you can type this in. You can type in Harnessing the Power of IoT. Get a real nice white paper written by Tiffany Sargent and talks about the different aspects of it and gives you a better idea of what Intel's all about, not just about chips, I'll tell you that much. It's everywhere from drones to edge devices to everything else. Now, one of the most popular parts of this program is my little nerd test here, Jason. So what I do is I have a scientific 10-question test, and we run it through a computer. We found out if you're, in fact, a card-carrying nerd or not. And I don't know. I mean, you got a suit and tie on. I don't know if you're much of a nerd you are. First question, do you have an Instagram account?
I do. It was actually recently hacked, so I need to reset it. I started getting messages from angry people asking me why I was tagging them in their picture, and I didn't even know what they were talking about. But luckily, Instagram picked it up, and have new password, and I'm back online.
Number of cell phones you've purchased for yourself in the last year? Just for you.
Just for me. I'm a single cell phone carrier, and it all runs through that device. That's not good.
Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
You know, we run everything through externally through at Intel Federal. I do use Twitter, but I don't have my own personal followers.
Do you know of a technology called Blab? B-L-A-B.
I don't.
You're sinking in the nerd tester. You better get up to speed or something. Start hanging out in Noma here and see what's going on here. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I am on the iPhone 6.
Okay. Talked about the app earlier. What's the most popular app on that phone?
Well, I use Twitter and LinkedIn Pulse daily, so I'd say that those are my constant sources of information.
So we break into your house tonight, and how many tablet devices do we see floating around there?
I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and we got 3 or 4 Kindles. We've got
that's good points.
iPads.
Oh boy, yeah, you're getting points here.
You know,
yeah,
I'll tell you what we do have it's been funny to watch is. We have an all-in-one, a 27-inch, you know, HP touchscreen, Windows 10, and it's been interesting to watch. Even my wife, who was kind of all in on the iPad, has really migrated to that device and to that experience, to that different experience. So,
Well, there's a battle. Tastes great, less filling. Wow,
yeah,
that's the Boston Red Sox, New York Yankees
on those other devices, but she's.
Making the transition. When was your most recent post on a social networking site?
I'm really active on LinkedIn, so I mean, I think I posted yesterday.
You
know, actually, what I posted yesterday, which I think is interesting, I think to a lot of users, is Intel yesterday. Our own IT department, so we, you know, $56 billion company, couple thousand IT employees. We publish an annual report every year on the business value that Intel IT department is delivering to the business, and in fact, this annual report this year is entitled Intel IT from the back room to the boardroom. And it's just really an interesting report that talks about all the business value that our own IT department is delivering to the business. And we find that federal CIOs, IT directors, both in public sector as well as private sector, find this to be a really interesting read. So that was actually, I published that yesterday, and I've had quite a few social media conversations with others about that.
Yeah, and we eat our own dog food. Yeah. It's the dog food article. That's what that one is. When is your Apple Watch due? Is it next week, or when exactly is it due, the $17,000 one?
You know, I just bought my wife. Intel acquired a company called Basis, mm-hmm. which is a smart watch, not maybe with all the bells and whistles of the Apple Watch, certainly at a lower price, but provides great fitness tracking, sleep monitoring, access to text, email. Bought that.
It's not stylish. I'm sorry. You need the $17,000 Apple Watch to be impressed.
Yeah, so that's a little outside my range.
Last book you read, was it paper or was it electronic?
It is electronic. It is. I keep a Kindle by my bed, and I had the good fortune of sitting in a session with President Bush. He was speaking with his press former briefer Mike. Just blanking on his book. I'll think of it. But just talking about. A lot of the what we've been dealing with in terms of just our approach from the intelligence community, and had the good fortune of just finishing his book.
Back in Bush's presidency, open source was kind of a niche type of topic where hobbyists would use it, and maybe they'd have computers at home and they'd play around with open source code. And now open source and this whole idea of open technology is becoming more and more popular. I would imagine that Intel's getting involved in this. I mean, they're buying companies like Mirantis, investing in it. So where does Intel fit in with the open source and the whole idea of open technology movement?
So I want to answer that. Let me just do it because I had a complete brain freeze. The book I just finished was Mike Morrell's book, The Great War of Our Time. So I strongly recommend reading that soon. So back to open source, and this is a big part of Intel's playbook over the years has been to accelerate the adoption of open source technology by the broad ecosystem. The more available open source technology is, we think that's better for the industry and really enables just continuous innovation at all layers, from edge all the way to cloud. That started with our work with Red Hat around RHEL. That is now extended into OpenStack. OpenStack, we believe, is a key enabler of moving towards a more efficient cloud architecture, hybrid public-private cloud. So we've invested a lot of resources with Red Hat and their OpenStack distribution, Mirantis with their OpenStack distribution, really looking at the overall OpenStack community and really working with a variety of different systems integrators, cloud providers, customers to bring OpenStack capabilities to the mainstream. And again, this is the type of thing that Intel has done for years. It's really raising the bar on core technologies. You're seeing that same playbook now with Hadoop. Hadoop brings some of the same types of open source capabilities to analytics through Hadoop. And we've made a significant investment in Cloudera. We're investing in other aspects of the Hadoop ecosystem because we believe that bringing analytics to the masses is important, and technologies like Hadoop are going to be key to doing that.
Yeah, we had Mike Olson on from Cloudera when they first started off. The first interviews he did, right? This dude right there talking about this silly thing called Hadoop and this pink elephant or some kind of elephant little logo, and it's just blossomed. It's just amazing how well it's applied to so many different things.
I think it was just at the tip of the spear on that technology. Today, it's just a great source for inexpensive storage solutions. But more and more, it's as more capabilities are added, you're really providing kind of analytics data visualization and analytics at a much larger scale.
Well, we look back at Intel, we see, my goodness, 1968, all kinds of innovations. What's going to happen in the next 60 years of Intel? Where are we heading?
I think the number of, and it seems like, there's always these reports about the number of devices and endpoints, and whatever that number is, we just keep blowing past it. And I think you're just going to continue to see that more and more compute at the edge. There's always, in our mind, is going to be a place for a PC and a PC-like form factor. But that growth, massive growth in devices, is not going to be in PCs necessarily. It's going to be in putting compute in places that it doesn't exist today. And, you know, we talked about snowboards and drones and cars and HVAC systems. Everything is going to be smart and everything is going to need to be secure. And I think and everything is going to be connected. And I think that is going to be the direction that it goes. And I think some of the problems that we're solving today around, you know, making those sensors smart is going to apply into the future for a long, long time. So I think you're just going to continue to see that. And then I think you'll continue to see advances in the data center to help process all of those data, you know, much more effectively. Continue growth in cloud, continue and then evolution of different architectures, the move to converged and hyper-converged architectures, people learning from what the Googles, the Facebooks, the Azures, the IBM soft layers, the things that they're doing around public cloud, and really bringing those technologies into the mainstream because we have to. There's too much data to continue to run things the way we have been, and I think that's just going to be that's going to be where things go.
So let's summarize this whole interview. If data moves, Intel wins. That's a good five-word summary. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Jason Kimry, Area Director, U.S. Federal Intel Corporation. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.